One of the prayers, when I was looking up prayers, had a farm worker's prayer of praise from the United Farm Workers. And it said, "Bless the hands of the people of the earth, the hands that plant the seed, the hands that bind the harvest, the hands that carry the burden of life. Soften the hands of the oppressor and strengthen the hands of the oppressed. Bless the hands of the workers. Bless the hands of those in power above them, that the measure they deal will be tempered with justice and compassion." Bless the hands. How many of you remember A Diet for a Small Planet? Having read that. Frances Moore LaPay. But in 2002, she wrote a book called Hope's Edge, The Next Diet for a Small Planet. And this is our reading. She says, "To me, democracy is an exciting living practice. It's what we do every day." Just registered that, practice, what we do every day. "To most, democracy doesn't relate to our daily lives, and it sure isn't much fun. I now see that to engage in democracy, to jump into this living practice, we all need something tangible to act on. Because food is our most primal need and our common bond to the earth and to each other, it can ground us as we stretch ourselves to draw in all the interlaced threads so we can weave a whole meaningful practice for ourselves, I would say of ourselves. With food as a starting point, we can choose to meet people and to encounter events so powerful that they can jar us out of our ordinary ways of seeing the world and open us to new uplifting possibilities." Thank you for coming today. When you see the title of food, it's so mundane and people don't want to be told what to eat that they kind of go, "I don't know about that one." But this is what we're going to do today. The UUA has a Unitarian Universalist Association, has a webpage on ethical eating, and the subtitle is Food and Environmental Justice. It begins by saying that as part of our dedication to environmental justice, we pay attention to the impact of our involvement in the food system. Ethical eating recognizes the moral consequences of our food choices. The ways our societies raise, buy, and consume our food has direct effects on the earth, plants and animals and humans who work to make our food available. So in 2011, Unitarian Universalists came together to take a stand on ethical eating and adopted a statement of conscience on the issue. You can go read it. And they developed a lot of materials and then a food justice ministry, this whole group and website, to help us and our congregations live into our commitments. This statement of conscience begins by saying, "Aware of our interdependence, we acknowledge that eating ethically requires us to be mindful of the miracle of life we share with all beings. As UUs, we are called to address our relationship with food." I would personalize that by saying we are called to address our relationship with our food. It goes on to recognize, for example, that some of us believe that it is ethical only to eat plants, while others of us believe it is ethical to eat both plants and animals. They say, "We do not call here for a single dietary approach. We encourage a knowledgeable choice of food based on understanding connected to our principles and the interconnectedness, the interconnections, actually, of our choices. Call on us to be, we encourage us to be knowledgeable and in community." A few years ago, one of the members of the congregation made the suggestion that at community events, we serve only vegan dishes. And vegan means that it's vegetarian, but it's no animal products are in the dishes. And we held a discussion about our food and about what we would do and came up with the idea of when we serve dishes, having some options available, but also putting cards with ingredients listed on them in front of the dishes. And there was a lot of discussion. There was a lot of comment. There was a lot of reaction in all kinds of directions. And we tried to acknowledge that we are vegans, vegetarians, pescatarians, flexitarians, all together. And while we were doing that, remember how we had those bumper stickers around Hendersonville a lot that were mostly by particular Christian groups, but there were bumper stickers about prayer that say, "We still pray." Remember those bumper stickers? I imagine that we should make a bumper sticker and sell it that would be for the carnivores in our congregation that says, "We still pray." P-R-E-Y. It's good to laugh about it. This year, our green team has adopted ethical eating as their focus for the year, helping us to be mindful of how our food choices, our diet, are part of our daily practice. Our daily practice of our participation in the miracle of life that we share with all beings. I first thought that this would be a simple, straightforward topic. It seems that way for me. That's just how I've lived, thinking about this a lot over the years. Read my write-up for the Beacon, and it's in your order of service, and you'll see that, to me, that sounds good. That sounds right. I'm not making that up. That's for real. But ethical eating as a phrase is not simple because it's personal. It's a matter of individual taste, literally. So it's particular. It's particular to histories and families and cultures and economics and stages of life and lifestyles and privilege and all kinds of things. Our choices are our solutions that we're making to different sets of conflicting demands and concerns. So what seems right for one person may not seem right for another. So my approach this morning is going to be to approach this a little bit sideways, because it's me and my thinking, my approach. It's not a recipe, but it's more how I cook. Remember that story of the great Jewish sage Hillel, lived 2,000 years ago, and a Gentile went to him wanting to be converted, wanting to connect, wanted to be a good person, and figured that this Jewish sage would help him to be good. And he said, "What is the essence of the Torah? Can you tell me that standing on one foot?" And he says, "Do not do harm to anyone that you would not want done to yourself." So it's the golden rule in kind of the negative version. Do to others as you would have them do unto you. And then the next phrase was, "The rest is commentary." Think about that. So me, my background is as a biologist, as an evolutionary ecologist. And that's how I organize the world and how I thought and still, in a way, how I think. And the essence of being human, from that perspective, if you walk up to an evolutionary sage and said, "Give me the essence of being human," and I would say that we evolved to eat, have children, feed and raise children, and then protect them so they can do all this again and again, generation after generation. All the rest is commentary. So for me, here's what's obvious. Food is foundational, and it's foundationally relational. To help you understand that and why I say that, and the way I go into this detail is because to try to move us a little bit out of the arguments of ingredients into more the ground, the flavor of what we're doing. To help you understand, let's start with the title for this morning, Ethical Eating, Faithful Living. Well, with the words eating and living, you're not going to have any issues. But ethical, what does ethical mean? It's notions of right and wrong. Actually, moral structure and sense of goodness. There are underlying understandings that inform that. For me, the essence of the religious message is to expand our circle of compassion, caring with and for. All the rest is commentary. And then right away, somebody says, well, how do you know if you're doing something wrong? Well, universalism says that a loving God, of course, would not condemn people to hell. It's not about punishment. But that if you're living in right relationship with God in that version, then you will know. You'll feel it. You'll sense it. If you're not in right relationship, that will wear on you, and you will know that as well. Something will be askew. So my version of that is more in right relationship with all that is. Earth was given as a garden, so you can think of, whether you identify the giver or not, being a part of creation and living in right relationship. Albert Schweitzer says that a person is ethical only when life is such as sacred, that of plants and animals as that of other men and women, and when one devotes oneself helpfully to all life that is in need of help. So I understand this being in right relationship, or even that sense of God's love, for those who use that language, in life and creation as being in right relationship with life. Having and cultivating awareness so you know when it's off, when you're off center. Are you having a bad day? Eat right for you. And then you can say, there was good in that day. I could taste it. I could feel it. I was a part of it. With ethics, right can easily become righteous. And I need to declare, because a lot of you watch what I eat and as if I'm judging what you eat. That's the other piece of it. It's not so much just interest or curiosity. Oh, Jim eats that. It's, well, what do you think about that, and if I'm not eating that? I'm not a righteous foodie. Right relationship, not righteous. Then you look at the other word in there, faithful. That's the word that a lot of people, when I've tried to use it as a word of meaning, come back and say, that just doesn't work for me. I can't do faith because of all the background. But I would change the web page to ethical eating, food, and faithful living, because it's meaningful. Faith is that word of a larger sense of meaning, that larger container within which we move that gives our life the sense of wholeness. It's meaning, belonging, right relationship with life and love. It's not faith as a recipe or assent to propositions, but how the ingredients fit and work together so that we understand it and can move with it. Faith, meaning, belonging, right relationship with life and love. And one more kind of thinking thing here that I have to declare, because this is about me. I could go, it's all about me. No, that doesn't work. One of my professors, who died this last year, Richard R. Niebuhr, wrote a book called Experiential Religion. And it wasn't so much about doctrines and those kinds of things. He talked a lot about beliefs, as beliefs not being in statements, but actually shown in your habits. You show what you believe by what are your habits. Your habits reflect your values. Your values come. come from your underlying beliefs. So what you do shows what you value. It actually shows what you give worth, what you worship. So what I eat and how I would say that I enjoy, I try to put life into eating. So, but what I eat and how I eat regularly, habitually, then reflects what I value. It actually reflects what I believe in. Every day, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times a day, if you count just before I go to bed. And as I talk about my beliefs, I should become aware and be mindful of literally what is on my table. So when somebody's telling you their beliefs, look at what they're serving. Be mindful of table and all that means in my life and to life. I strive to be in right relationship with life and love and with the earth. What I eat should be good for me, good for the earth, should support and not harm or oppress those who help me get it. All the rest is commentary. And I would say conversation. But I also might add that eating should also involve appreciation, care, community, and hospitality, right relationship. So now to me, my approach to ethical eating, it's layered, flexible, and not absolute, but it's very foundational. I tend toward whole, unprocessed, minimally processed foods. I tend towards ones that are organic. I lean more toward locally grown and raised. I try to buy my greens where they say they're grown in North Carolina rather than California. My fruit, United States, with notable tropical exceptions. Bananas, avocados, occasionally tomatoes. Sorry, Paul. But look, I started way back because organic used to be a word you could trust. It used to be a shorthand for thinking about all these things you were concerned about in your food, but not so much anymore. You still have to learn what's behind organic and what it actually means. You have to read labels. You have to find out about what the company is behind your food. Still, organic, I do it reflexively, because I wouldn't ask workers to expose themselves to chemicals I wouldn't expose myself to just so I can have cheaper food. That realization came about when I sat at my father's bedside as he died with Parkinson's. You can't really say of Parkinson's, but Parkinson's is a genetic predisposition with what? An environmental trigger. My father grew citrus trees and worked in the orange groves all his life. My uncle, this last year, same thing. He was a farmer, and he sprayed almost every day of his life during the during the spraying season. I also, when I say organic, again, it's not as an absolute. I buy my tomatoes, or not buy, Paul gives me his tomatoes. And every time he gives me his tomatoes, he goes, they're not organic, Jim. But I don't care because I know Paul. And I know how Paul makes his decisions and how he grows responsibly and does what he needs to do in relation to his food. I know my food because I know my farmer and I know where it comes from. So very simply, I tend toward whole unprocessed food that is organic, and I lean towards locally grown. I eat low on the food chain, and when I eat meat, I tend toward fish. And then I have to go sustainably caught, maybe farmed, but I have to find out how it's farmed. And when I eat meat, very rarely, but when I do, it's raised humanely, not factory processed, and I like it to be a part of supporting the local economy. Large meat processing packing plants are the most dangerous, working in them is the most dangerous job in the United States. And it's mostly done, almost totally done with immigrant labor. And when they get where they decide they can't do it anymore and it becomes unpopular, a draw from their country, the companies go and find another country to get people to come in to do the work. Right relationship, belonging, it also has the piece of enjoy. So, to sort of feel these connections. And that means taking moments of appreciation and gratitude. Taking that time to think about what's going on with our food. Not just stuffing our face, you know, or getting the calories. Companions actually means those we share bread with. All the rest is commentary. But that's where a matter of taste, that's where it gets complex, that's where you're thinking. There are things in that commentary, there's tradition, there's time. The biggest thing is we don't want to spend the time to think about our food. We just go and get our food so we can do other things. That wasn't the way it was only less than 100 years ago about how you could do that. You had to spend time on your food. There's cost, accessibility, habit. When I say tradition, we're moving into that time where you talk about grandmothers cooking or particular items they do. I can think of downstairs in the craft sale, all the food. I think about it. I know who cooked those. It's been several years of those wonderful, delicious things. Michael Pollan says one of the ways to address tradition is try to make a meal with ingredients your great-great-grandmother would recognize as food. So ethical eating, faithful living, right relationship with life and its gift, as we've said, and all its diversity. Right relationship with earth, with myself, with my family, my child. Hannah turned 23 this week. Thursday was her birthday. And I'll share two stories, and you may have heard them, but I have to share them because she's turning 23. I don't think there are going to be any more of these stories like this. So this may be the end of these stories. One is, when we first got here, and this is how I marked the time here, Hannah turned 3 on her November birthday after I got here in August. And she was sitting at the table with her friends, and her mother and I had made one of our organic whole food apple juice sweetened cakes. It was delicious. Put it on the table, 4 little girls sitting around the table waiting for cake. Paige Neville took the first bite, and she started to cry. It was not cake. At that moment, Hannah's grandmother appeared out of the kitchen in my little house. How she snuck it in there, I don't know, with a white frosted bunny cake and saved the day for me, for stories, for, I don't know, counseling for all those little girls for the rest of their lives. But that's where you have to move with what's going on and how it works with personal taste. The other story is a story from fourth grade. Anna was fed up with having organic lunches and having children look at her lunch and say, "Hannah, what are you eating?" And doing that. And she came home and said, "Dad, I want to pack my own lunch." And I said, "Okay." She goes, "I want to shop for it." So we went to Ingles, and she was going around and shopping, but I would go up and look at the labels and try to go, well, this one has high fructose corn syrup. Maybe you want to do this one, which has just sweetened with fruit juice, this kind of thing. And after a couple of times of doing that, because it turns out she really just wanted snackables, but or Lunchables, I guess they're called, but she looked at me and she goes, "Dad, it's okay." She goes, "All of my friends eat like this, and none of them have died." Yeah. Of course, we didn't go in then to, well, what happens if you do this for years and years and years, you know? And then she goes, "And it's only for a week. So just get out of my way." So our meaning, our faith, begins with our food. It's as simple as that. Earth, connection, being, food. We are what we eat. What we eat affects how we are in the world. It becomes practice for what we're doing and for action. So how are you living ethically and faithfully? What are you enjoying, actually putting life energy into that? So what comes to mind? Ethical eating, faithful living, what does that evoke for you? How are you in right relationship? What's good? What's meaningful? What's connecting? What's enjoyable to you? We got a couple minutes if anybody has anything they'd like to. You can disagree with me too. I'm not, and I'll eat the heck out of whatever you cook. So, yeah, Pat.
A quick little story. When I was very young, I had grown up in a blue-collar town. I had never seen a lobster before. And Jack and I, we were newlyweds. We went to a friend at the shore, and they were going to cook lobster. And I saw the pot of boiling water, and I saw this creature on the counter, and they told me they were going to throw that creature into the pot of boiling water alive. Well, I was horrified. And when everyone went out to the deck, I snuck the lobster out and threw it in the bay.
Well, I just wanted to hold up to how much I really think this whole notion of right relationship, faithful living plays into this, because one of the things, too, is that you'll see me, and people watch this, meaning I don't eat a lot of desserts. That's just my choice, you know? I should share with you, because then I mean, it's personal. It's like, then you watch it, but I'll taste it. I'll eat a little bit and just to taste and appreciate it because I really enjoy it. But I can tell you that the cooks in this congregation make the best everything. They work the miracles with butter and sugar and chocolate and then fruit and pastry. And so when you see me not eating a whole lot, because that's what we assume, if you really love it, you're going to eat a whole lot. Don't assume that I'm not liking it or I'm not going there. It's just I don't do that when I can force myself not to. So don't forget Bob and Fran Gurman's workshop next Saturday, The Power of Food. You can start sorting this out, thinking about this. It's in the Beacon, and you can sign up for it and join us for that. Ethical eating, faithful living.